Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Last Lap podcast post the Las Vegas Grand Prix. And we have been maybe proved wrong in terms of the action that we saw, because that was a barnstormer.
That's some energy for 7:57 in the morning, Darren. That was good.
Cheers, guys. That's what you get. That's what you're getting. Like and subscribe.
And you know what? When you get a banging F1 race to watch with your mates, it was a pleasure, boys. Spanners, Brad Philpott, thank you very much for sticking around and joining us for the podcast.
Like I said, this was always destined to be one of the best races of the season. Where are the haters now? Where are they?
Yeah.
I am honoured to have been invited on for this race, because there were plenty of races this season that it would have been difficult to scrape together some talking points, but this, we've got quite a few.
No, that was an easy breezy one. Even if it was a stinker, it would have been great with you guys. But when it's a good race, this show is an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, 100% show, 100% entertainment, and we actually got a decent race as well.
We got a very good race, but we can't be too positive. Let's briefly start, because I think there's still a lot of merit in discussing what happened on Thursday, first and foremost.
Okay.
Because certainly the race delivered, and this was the most hyped event of, sorry, we're just seeing pictures of Max
Checo. Cool down car.
Show in, yeah, it's got all like little stars.
It's a Rolls Royce. It's literally a Rolls Royce.
Sorry, I'm getting sidetracked. and it's certainly, I would call it a false start. It was a false start to this weekend. And we see, you know, more often than we'd like, we're talking about how this sport is stewarded or how it's managed by the F1 or whatever. And there were things that could have been done differently. But where do we sit on what happened Thursday?
I have done so much research into drain covers, municipal
concrete,
firefighting, concrete, nice. Stuff like that.
Yeah, hey, look, you're an expert now.
It's really simple. Obviously, F1 can't come out and go, we did a bad, because they are now having, there's a legal suit being filed on
there
behalf
is.
Of the fans who got kicked out just before FP2 started. So I think that's the thing that upset me the absolute most, was stringing the fans along until 1:30 in the morning, kicking them out. And probably the last ones that were getting kicked out could hear the action that they've been waiting all day for. Now, that was unacceptable. The reasons for it were they didn't have a contingency plan for staff working late. But they put one in for Saturday to make sure it didn't happen again. So they should have done that on Friday. So that's error number two. Error number one is somebody, as far as I can tell, someone made a decision to replace all of the drain covers that were there, which I think are normally cast iron, with aluminium covers of their own. So the race event brought them. They had little brass locks, and someone made the decision that would stand up to cars with ground effect running over them. And they instantly didn't.
She didn't test it.
And mistakes happen. Someone's made that mistake. Normally, those sorts of things need to be welded down. But they've looked at that and gone, no, this one will do. But that device in no way will have been race tested. But what really annoyed me was they came out with two conflicting statements to start with. A, it wasn't the drain cover at all. It was the concrete insert that failed. No, there was no concrete insert. And then the second one was, well, we did seal it down with sealant. But then there was pictures of these drain covers being very quickly taken up as they decided to fill it in with concrete. So yes, great weekend, but massive, massive false start. Those fans deserve much, much more than a £200 gift certificate for a team.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So yeah, I was enraged.
I think you're missing the key point, which is that my boss was late into work on Friday morning. So I was planning on watching the practice two from my desk at work. And then it was delayed and for long enough for him to come in, so I couldn't properly watch it.
Real victim.
Yeah.
Fuming.
Well, look,
there's my t-shirt money.
But no, I think definitely the most egregious thing, because that half one cutoff was a set cutoff. That was always going to be the thing. So rather than just not communicating with the fans who were there, just tell them, look, this is the hard cutoff. If we can't get going by half one, you're not going to see any action. And don't leave people sitting for 4 or 5 hours in the stands. And like you said, there is a lawsuit now, which, look, it was a false start. And I've got to briefly talk on, I thought Toto Wolff's response was fucking pathetic.
Yeah.
I hated it. It really pissed me off. He's trying to like deflect and, oh, it's not an issue. No one, like, Europeans are all asleep anyway. Like, fuck off.
I was awake.
I'm sorry.
And that he turned it on that poor reporter, like, no, that, saying that it was a stupid question.
That.
It wasn't a stupid question.
It wasn't
at all.
No. A black eye was a very eloquent way, I think, of describing it, because it was, of course, this is the most hyped up sporting event in modern F1 history.
And the first day was a complete disaster.
And
there's no
acknowledge it. Yeah, they improved it. FP2 run fine, right? They did what they needed to do. And obviously the knock-on effects of it running late and the cutoff, yeah, that's unfortunate. And they could have managed it a bit better. But you can't just not acknowledge it and then get pissed off with people for being like, no, there's been a genuine fuck up here.
Yeah. So in Toto's defense, and I might be wrong here, I'm not sure at the time of that press conference going live whether he will have had the full information about the fans being sent home, because I think that was during
whilst
things were still up in the air. Yeah. So potentially, had he known that fans were, he's a sensible guy, had he known fans were all being sent home and there was a lot of discontent, he might not have reacted quite like that.
But also his Europeans are asleep.
Yeah, that was a poor comment.
Like, come on. I think
it's not just Europeans that watch Formula One.
No,
as well.
And I think
come on, like
that to me.
Half of them woke up anyway.
Yeah, so. that to me demonstrated a broader, he was in a bit of a tiff about it. Look, for me, he's the only team principal who has actual stock in his team, and F1 have put hundreds of millions into this event, and that team value is inherently linked to the value of Formula One. And look, it's gone well, but that was. That was a big full start.
No, and it wasn't just it will be forgotten by the morning, because there were people who spent what you would normally spend on a normal Grand Prix weekend just to see the Thursday or just to see the Friday. And F1 are the ones who have made this big deal about Friday has to be entertaining. That's why we have to have sprint races. That's why we have an opening ceremony the evening before this action starts. So they can't just laugh it off and go, oh, sorry, you missed a bit of practice. It happens. It's Stefano Domenicali's statement afterwards, comparing it to rain. It's like, well, sometimes it rains and people miss out. Like, no, this is you making a fundamental safety error
and then
not having a contingency plan. You can tell I got a little riled up by that.
The rain isn't the FIA's fault. Yeah. They didn't just rock up one day and go,
It's disingenuous to make that comparison.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And the moment that statement came out, it was pretty obvious that they were just trying to cover themselves.
Scrambling for stuff, yeah.
And trying to give the people who would take that and accept that as a reason something to talk about. But yeah, you can't compare genuine force majeure, external events to something that is literally your poor preparation. So,
and again, look, don't get me wrong. I think there's a lot of people who go into this weekend looking for something to dislike about it. Okay. But you know what?
Who are they?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Disgraceful.
Yes, the Thursday did somewhat stink, but fortunately today we got an incredible race. Yeah, I thought that was arguably maybe the best race of the season.
It's up there. There's been some good ones, honestly. I love Zandvoort. I thought that was absolutely mental. But this top two,
well,
probably.
What I want to ask, boys, is why do we think that race delivered? Was it inherently because the track's quite good, or is that just one factor in many? Because we're talking about a bit of a mixed up grid on Saturday, right, as well, Brad?
Yeah, so I think partially we had some cars out of position from qualifying. We had Perez and Sainz and Hamilton in that little trio in the midfield. But I think really the reason this race worked today was because you could actually overtake. Mm. The whole predictions of it being difficult to pass here were proven wrong, because I think people passed at pretty much every corner and then sometimes repassed.
Yep.
It was actually an interesting layout. It worked much better for battling than I expected. So people being out of position, yeah, that will have helped. And it's difficult to know how the race will have played out without safety car and virtual safety car interventions. But I've got a hunch that this would have worked as a normal non-safety car race as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I'm not sure, right? So what do we need for the race to be interesting? Ideally, you have some faster cars behind slower cars. And then in this Pirelli era, you want a tyre delta offset. So you want some cars on track on slightly newer tyres, some on slightly older tyres, some on soft tyres, some on medium tyres, all to give you that extra opportunity to pass. And this race had the qualifying being like it was, putting about five cars out of sync in front of a pack of about four faster cars behind. So that gave us action at the start, with Alonso desperately trying to make up places and spinning. Carlos Sainz also making a mistake, again, because he's at the back and he's trying to make up places. And then the two safety cars were ideally timed. So the first safety car gave people an opportunity to change strategies. So that mixed the grid up again and put people on different strategies. And then the final safety car also did that, because the final safety car is what put Perez in the mix and gave us a lot of action at the end. Otherwise, it would have just been Verstappen cruising up to the back of Leclerc and overtaking. So whilst that was a good Grand Prix and the track and the low grip has contributed a much bigger part than I would have guessed it did, they did have that perfect trifecta of conditions to put cars out of order.
Yeah, and it's I think inherently it's a punishing track, not just in the fact that it's a street circuit, but in the fact that the time of the year it's running, the cold conditions, which are much colder than any other race this year, and it's going to be the same next year as well. It's going to be round 22 next year. So I think that does all play into this being a, it's a tricky track. Like that, we haven't seen a turn one like that for a while, where like the amount of people, well, first couple of laps, the amount of mistakes we were seeing.
Yeah, and people, it was just no, it's like an ice skating rink.
I would like to know, like, in terms of driver error, how many, I mean, we had Lando, massive shunt.
Yeah, massive shunt as well, yeah.
You know, how many driver errors relative to other tracks on the calendar, I would say.
Yeah.
But I think, so Spanner said that the safety cars played into the way it kind of worked as a race and popped. But the track layout has a lot to do with the fact that there were safety cars.
Exactly.
And we may well get that every year we come here. Or maybe we'll come next year and actually it'll be a little bit straightforward like sometimes Baku is. But this track, I think, has just a little bit more about it.
I think if we're looking at like sort of the potential, I think obviously, yes, we had people out of position. Qualifying was a bit nuts. But I mean, more often than not this season, we've had Checo going out in Q2 anyway and stuff like that. I think the potential comes in the way that, like you said, there were overtakes happening everywhere. I think pretty much every single braking zone had at least a few overtakes today, and even non-braking zones because of switchbacks and maneuvers through at, like, after turn one and stuff. And you also had people re-overtaking, like battles. Like genuinely, it was a bit of back and forth. It wasn't just driving up to someone, DRS, boom, that's it, keep it moving. So I think the flow of the track and being able to stay within a second of someone once they've overtaken you so that you can make a move again a couple laps later, I think, I see potential.
Just to be difficult.
Go for it.
That's what we want.
We love the attacking because that's the sexy bit, isn't it? But was it too hard for cars to defend? There was no opportunity really to defend.
There were some DRS cruise past.
There were a few,
There were a few, but you're always going to get some of them, I guess, aren't you? Like, A track like this inherently is going to be, I think we talked about this in stream, right? I was quite concerned before this race that, you know, we never raced here before. How have they worked out the DRS zones? And I think broadly speaking, they nailed it, but it's never going to be 100%, is it? Yeah. I mean, the Hasses, they were getting overtaken in a straight line. Yeah, because
but that's just because people were being filtered back through. And because
I'm happy
like
to complain both ways. So at Singapore, I'll complain that you get stuck because it's impossible to overtake. But what we didn't have is that kind of Singapore effect where people couldn't follow from 8 seconds behind.
Yeah.
We didn't have that. They could follow closely. But what I love actually about that is low grip. And nearly every time we talk about a great race with mixed conditions and stuff, we always want this situation with low grip. And we saw low grip today and you saw people having to drive it and struggle with it. So I will once again, Brad, try to convince you that the time has come to bring back groove tires and low grip.
So groove tires are not necessary. But you can have low grip in other ways that don't make the cars look silly.
Skinny wooden tires.
Skinny wooden tires.
Farthing tires.
That are square.
And I think if you're going to reduce grip, reducing mechanical grip isn't the thing you want to take away. It's the aero. But yeah, it pains me. As a driver, watching much better drivers struggle because the tires aren't quite in the window actually pains me. I don't like seeing that. But in terms of an entertaining race as a complete outsider, just watching it, I agree. It gives you, there's a bit more of an unknown aspect to it. You don't quite know who's going to make it work. It wasn't anything like as slippery as some people were predicting.
No,
we had this whole Turkey situation.
Lap one, turn one
was more slippery than people, the drivers expected. A couple of people clearly just making big errors. But aside from that, I think they judged it quite well. Like you say, Spanner, it was kind of the right balance of, it was grippy enough that you could have good racing and people could go offline and make passes. It wasn't like the racing line was the only usable part of the track.
For sure.
But it was just low grip enough that you had to get it right. You couldn't barrel down the inside and expect it to be okay. And Leclerc on aging tyres towards the end couldn't afford to break a couple of meters late and get away with it. You know, he's immediately going to lock up and run wide.
Yeah. Yeah. I think going into, you know, we had a similar level, well, not to the same extent, but, you know, we talked about this, didn't we, last week? Like Miami kind of came with all this fanfare and this intrigue, mm-hmm. and the races just have not delivered there. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad this wasn't the same. I think if Miami had been a pleasant surprise, I think there would have been maybe a bit less skepticism going into Vegas.
Yeah, yeah.
Fortunately, Vegas has bucked the trend. But what I will say, this was a fantastic race. But what I think there's always room for improvement. This is the very first time that we're not going to see the exact same format, I'm sure, next season. What would we change? Is there anything we'd change about this weekend's format? Maybe start time, maybe DRS? I don't know. Is there anything we'd move for next year?
I'd just do exactly the same next time. Make sure that there's no grip. Have a couple of safety cars. Because also the safety cars, we take it for granted, but obviously the safety cars push the pack back together again,
yeah.
and gave us that racing. And on street circuits, when you get a high percentage of safety cars, that is a lot of the time what saves it as a spectacle. Like Baku is really binary. If there's a well-timed safety car, good race. If not, absolute dud.
Yeah.
So if I was the FIA, I would just, you know, Nelson Piquet it, Junior. Every single time, make sure, just pay one of the drivers.
Magnussen, yeah. I reckon yeah. Magnussen would be down.
Who's on their way out?
One driver.
Yeah, Magnussen's yeah. probably your last year. Yeah, here's some cash.
Yeah,
maybe you have a little accident. You know, we'll tell you when.
He's crashed yeah. for the fourth time this week.
Look at the sphere. When the sphere kind of does a cutting the throat signal, K-Mag knows that's the time.
The sphere
go.
Just comes up with yeah. a random driver's face. You've been allocated yeah, this time. Yeah, fuck the Hunger Games.
Just have it like with K-Mag doing a thumbs up and the graphic will say, I'm sure everything will be okay for Kevin Magnussen right now. And then when he crashes, no one will suspect the thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So in terms of some, you know, other realistic things they might want to do, you could potentially just clip the DRS zone length slightly, because there were a couple of passes that the move was done well before the next corner.
Yep.
But it wasn't terrible. And I think just the pack closing up, just another year of the regulations kind of working and
yeah, yeah.
hopefully everyone closing up. We already had a pretty close race throughout much of the field.
Yep.
Another year of it getting hopefully closer and it should just work, because all you really need is a track where racing is possible.
Yeah.
And it's a track that where the high speed and the long straights and DRS and slipstream will keep people hopefully relatively bunched together. And as long as you can also overtake in that situation, if you get it right, then it'll be an interesting race. So I don't think too much needs to change. I don't really know. In terms of layout and that kind of thing, I don't know even what's possible.
The track map needs to always be turned 180 degrees clockwise so that the pig can stand up next year.
Yeah.
It's fine. It is a pig.
The
pig,
deserves to stand on its own 2 feet.
It hasn't been able to walk the entire weekend.
Exactly. It's an incredibly useful animal, very smart.
Yeah.
So let's stop the pig shame and get it off its back.
Couldn't agree more.
Utilize it
upright.
Yeah. Couldn't agree. Niren, would you change anything about Vegas for next year?
I'd maybe put... I think most people will know the layout. I think change one of the times of one of the sessions. Have FP3 when it's like sunset or some shit.
I think
like during the
moving
day.
The race maybe forward a couple of hours, so you've got like sunset and it still ends in the dark.
Because then we'll have to be here for four in the morning.
So I don't mind.
Fuck Europeans.
We don't.
Fuck Europeans.
No, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
He does not speak for us.
So maybe controversially, I quite like how exotic it feels having to be up late at night to watch races. I don't mind watching Australia
easy,
or Japan.
It's not like the Australians or the
if you're in
the west coast of the States. Like, come on.
You're done out.
We've got it easy, man. I'm like, if I need to get up, I don't mind it at all.
But
if I need to start watching it soon.
Come down, and that affects
But no. But the East Coast US figures will go up. Because the East Coast US, this race started at like 3 a.m. or whatever.
They got thrown under the bus for us.
Yeah.
Because everyone wasn't prepared to annoy us.
But no, I'm sorry. There's so many races that cater to our time zone. No, fuck it. I'm sorry. Like, I would much rather. I think there's also, you're getting potentially, if it's starting under a little bit of light, then you're getting a warmer temperature going into a cooler temperature, which adds another element. It's not just cold all the way through.
Mm.
And I think you're getting, I think sunset would look sick.
I said this to you guys earlier on. I think it would be nice to be able to see some of the landmarks without it just being neon lights.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to see what the place looks like first. And then, as you say, it gets into darkness and you see that side of it as well.
Okay, can I just have the camera just for a second here? Okay, listen, America. Don't mind that you've taken over Formula One, but you're still the new kids on the block.
Yeah.
You enjoy your 2 a.m. Grand Prix for now. And we'll talk in 2030.
Okay. Yeah. I like that.
There you go. That's what I think that would spice things up a little bit more next year. But again, and I think having it again towards the end of the season as well, and a lot of, I'm surprised no power units went pop considering how close we are to the end of the year. But we've got to talk about Charles Leclerc and Ferrari. What I want to ask is there any eventuality where Charles could have won this race? Because he ended up about 5 seconds down the road
from Max. I'm just going to say right now, no, because he started on pole. There is no eventuality.
For him to
it's not possible for Charles Leclerc to start on pole and also win the race. It has to be one or the other. So just mathematically,
yeah,
no.
True.
So could he have pitted at the last safety car when the two Red Bulls benefited from fresher tyres? I think the answer is probably no, because he'd only pitted five laps before that.
So Max had also only pitted.
He didn't have another set, whereas Max
didn't have another set.
Right, yeah, because I was going to say, because Max also pitted at the same time Charles did originally, and then pitted again, I believe, under the safety car. That's how he was behind Checo in the first place.
And it felt like those mediums fell off quite quickly. I know Oscar put him on with like five to go and was doing fastest laps.
That seemed really late. But anyway.
But no, I think, look, Ferrari, there was a lot of expectation going into, well, especially after practice.
By who? Who was sitting there going, Leclerc's got this?
Yeah, but like Ferrari, their race pace, like their race pace simulations were quick in
much practice. Better than normal.
Yeah. Better than Monza.
And that is what was shown during the race. That did come to fruition.
So their main weakness was exposed less.
Yes.
For sure. I mean, look, they developed that package for Monza. They kind of, you know, they developed that package specifically because they wanted to do well and give a show to Ferrari fans in Monza. Like, it wasn't the most, like, they haven't been able to exploit that Monza package really since Monza.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, going to Vegas, they've got, all right, come. We know that actually, if you work well in Monza, you should work well in Vegas. And look, if Carlos Sainz was up there, who knows? Brief bit on that penalty.
What a load of crap.
Yeah, load of shit. I do kind of get the point that you were saying though, Brad, in terms of like, it almost goes the other direction. It goes the other direction if you kind of allow him to then have fresh parts, fresh power unit, whatever, and then there's kind of no offset to it.
But
he can swing the other way.
I am with you guys, but I do think there should be some mechanism that if it's clearly, I don't want the stewards to just have free rein to make stuff up and apportion penalties or not give a penalty just because they kind of feel like, oh, that guy was a bit inconvenienced, because then it gets really murky.
Yeah.
But there should be, in a situation like this where it's absolutely clear that it's an organisational problem that has caused a major issue.
It's not a sport
competitor.
There is
Ferrari and Carlos Sainz could not have done anything different other than just happen to not drive over that bit of the track on that lap.
Yeah.
And he was put at, you know, risk in terms of safety, a very, very high risk. But anyway, that's by the by. There should be a situation where if it's this clear, then they've got additional pounds.
In the movie version of this, where Carlos Sainz is played by Pedro Pascal, they see how unfortunate it all is, even though he's like 55, whatever. Yeah. He'll still do it. Doesn't matter. Brad Pitt's playing an F1 driver.
True.
Yeah.
And so in the movie version, everyone's like, oh, it's so unfair. And the steward's like, there's nothing we can do. And then one team steps forward and they crack a gearbox. And then they crack another bit of the gearbox, put it back together. Give me my 10-second penalty. And then all the way down the grid, they're like, give me my 10-second grid place penalty. And they all do it. And like,
in solidarity.
And it all evens out.
And everyone claps.
In solidarity. Yeah. Look, what could have been... The thing is as well, I think if Carlos is up there with Charles, maybe then Ferrari can play a bit more of a strategic game and maybe hold on for a win.
I think he lost as soon as the second safety car happened, truthfully.
Science
was just a turn.
Science did fuck it up at the start. Like, he just went.
He did also pin it, as well.
But then if he's not starting at the back, then...
Yeah. Well, Brad made a good point in the stream about Verstappen benefiting from that safety car.
I think I asked if he did. I'm not sure if he actually did.
He did.
He got to change tyres with less of a penalty. But Verstappen was also inconvenienced himself through no fault of his own when he was crashed into by Russell.
True.
So I still think Verstappen was the rightful, deserving winner in that
race.
I think he, like, contrary to what I would normally say, I credit when it's due and where it's due, he drove really well and had to come back from some pretty low down positions and make the moves and come through.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll allow him that. Well-timed safety car.
Does that hurt you to say that? Are you okay?
No, not at all. This is a misconception about that. I am very fair with how I call things. I'm very consistent. And it's just so happens that one team and driver are more often the ones doing bad
and
stuff.
You know what? The penalties for Russell and the penalty for Verstappen. Yeah, we did call that. We all called that kind of unanimously pretty
quickly. Took them ages to do the first one, but it's
yeah, that was weirdly
well,
wrong.
Okay, it was penalised properly, as in consistently.
A little bit late.
Yeah, when everybody has had that, no steward's decision has been, okay, you have to hand the place back. They seem to have stopped doing that. They basically say, you can hand back the position if you want, but if you don't, we'll make a decision. So they said 5-second penalty, that's completely consistent. But the fact still remains that Verstappen has once again just run an opponent off track. And surely there's got to be a point where, like when it was people overtaking off track and 5-second penalty, that feels like, okay, fair enough. Especially say turn two at Hungaroring where that happens quite a lot and you don't want to see the racing ruined because they just inched over the line. So 5-second penalty, that seems fine. But just repeatedly running drivers off track to me is boring racing.
It's also like it gives you the air of like, well, I can get away with that now. If I'm in a fast car,
just do it.
And I just want to get a move done.
Yep.
I know I can just run someone off.
Yeah.
And just jog off into the distance and get my 5 seconds back.
We all agreed like that was deserving of, you know, a penalty or some kind of reversing of positions. But also what I would say is that given how many people struggled with that braking zone into turn one on the first lap, you know, maybe he just got a bit optimistic on the brake pedal. Didn't necessarily intend to push off.
Yeah. Coincidentally, you know, looks like the kind of move he does.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've seen him pull that move far too many times and not get punished for it.
I think the fact that that happened, whether it was intentional or not, the fact that it happened and Red Bull weren't immediately thinking we need to give this back. Quite the contrary, they were expecting to not get a penalty. You know, that's why they let him carry on.
Yeah,
it's so different from what we've seen from other teams. Look at Mercedes at Singapore. Oh, the moment I don't think Hamilton needed to give back the position or two positions in that situation, and I can't recall it perfectly, but Mercedes immediately made him do it and actually had an abundance of caution and made him give an extra one back.
Yeah, Norris.
It's a completely different attitude when it's Red Bull because they're not expecting that to be penalised because that is a move that gets done by Max or has historically been done. And it's at least 50-50 deemed to be fine. And I think regardless of who does it, there is this real problem that you can get a move done. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a faster car, you just drive off down the road.
But that's why consistency is so important. That's why we always call for consistency because we want to be able to look at an incident like that and be like, not only do we think it should or shouldn't be penalised, but we got a good idea. All right, will the stewards... Because ideally, we just want... Well, ideally, Red Bull would have just let Max like go behind and there would be no penalty. No one wants to see penalties.
Yeah.
Like penalties are always like anti-racing, essentially. Like you'd rather see it sorted out on track where possible. And I think because that's where the difference in steward one race to another is kind of annoying. The final Santander Lap Zero challenge is here. Vegas Grand Prix has just happened. This is the final one of the season. How will we do?
The Santander Lap Zero quiz is getting close to the finish line, so don't forget to play and win for the final race of the season.
So the decider for this week is, who said it?
Who did say it? Indeed.
Let's find out.
Yeah, it's our time to decide. Now, before we get into this, I've taken the unusual strategy of already deciding my answer.
Unique strat.
Before the question's been asked.
He's feeling confident, this one, isn't he?
Because... content in it, so yeah, I've already locked mine in.
It's confident for 8:47 in the morning.
Maybe it's delusional for 8:47 in the morning.
Maybe. Well, Spanner's
delirious.
Brad's. Give us the first quote, I guess, please.
After you, Bradley.
Not necessarily in the accurate accent. Do I deserve to be out of the points? No, it's unacceptable.
Oh, there's two drivers that come to mind here, but I'm going to go with. So you can't just write.
Oh, I can't write. Oh, so it's not multiple choice.
Okay.
No.
Oh.
This isn't your GCSEs.
Flipping heck. Well, my plan's out the window because I just put B. So I can't, unfortunately, that's not really going to, it's not really going to fly around here, is it?
Do you do well in this game normally? Or
well, usually it's multiple choice. So it has. Oh, okay. I've actually beaten him twice, which probably says a lot, really, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it says a lot. No, neither am I.
Hang on a second.
All right, I've got an answer. I've locked it in quite early. I just feel like I fucking picture this driver saying it. And they're definitely not Australian, which I'm assuming is what the accent was, trying to be anyway.
I just wrote in the driver that I thought fitted the accent the most.
Okay, let's reveal our answers in 3, 2, 1. Carlos Sainz, I've gone with.
I put Mark Webber because it was an opportunity.
You actually went for the Australian.
It was just simply an opportunity to write
you
that
were,
out.
You were fooled.
But there's an active Australian on the grid that you could have gone for that would have been obviously more likely to be correct.
Yeah.
No. Piastri.
Yeah.
Daniel Ricciardo. But I can't imagine Daniel Ricciardo saying unacceptable. He's so chill on the radio.
Do we tell him?
Yeah, do we just say whether you're right or wrong?
Give us the answer. Yeah, the answer.
So the answer was Carlos Sainz.
Unacceptable.
Carlos Sainz's radios are the best radios. I'm sorry, he's number one for me.
He's number one, is he?
Number one.
Fernando Alonso.
Best radios. No, Sainz, man.
Yeah, Sainz is up there, to be fair.
Remember, what was the one when he, what was it? When he was like, he was almost like, was it Australia, wasn't it? When he was like, they can't take this away from me, please. Please.
Oh, yeah.
He was like,
I'm
so distraught.
Upset, man. He was so sad that day, bless him.
That was top tier. All right, sweet. Next quote, Spanners.
Number two. Here we go. All right, then, here we go. Mate, is Carlos blind or wet?
I didn't realise Jackie Stewart was back in Formula One. is Carlos blind or what?
What?
Ooh.
Wet. Okay.
All wet. Yeah, is he blind or wet? That's actually the question.
See you, Jimmy.
Oh, is Carlos...
So who's had a run-in with Carlos Sainz recently?
Okay, I'm going to go...
See, I have an option, but I just don't think this would be the answer because of of logistical reasons.
I've got a name. I've locked mine in. Is Carlos blind or what?
I'm gonna say it,
you like Jackie Stewart, mate. You really haven't got what we're doing. For
fuck's sake.
Is it cool though?
Jackie was there this weekend, wasn't he? You always notice Jackie because he's got the full tartan. He's got the tartan hat.
I walked
past
him at Silverstone in the stairs and I was nearly was like, you're Jackie Stewart. But he knew.
That, yes, I am.
he knew that you knew.
he knew he was Jackie Stewart. All right, reveal 3, 2, 1. I've got Max.
You're both wrong. It was Piastri.
Okay.
Mate, is Carlos blind or what?
Mate?
Okay.
But no, he's lazier than that, isn't it, Piastri? He goes, mate.
The thing is, I
that was a little bit sassy.
When that was said, I just got an incident in my mind, and it was, you know, when they came together in Silverstone in that qualifying.
Yeah.
For some reason, I just got that in my mind. I put Charles Leclerc, by the way. I don't know.
If it was Max, he would have been like, is he fucking blind or what?
Yeah, facts. And if it was the Leclerc, probably wouldn't have made it into this quiz. Santander. So.
Yeah, true.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, why would they do that? Yeah.
True. Okay. All right. Quote number three. Back to Brad.
Okay. Quote number three is, just let me drive the car, yeah?
Oh, okay. Just let me drive the car.
Who's giving that?
Let me talk. KDV.
He's going to write Gasly. Watch.
No, he'll write some French
guy. It could be
Ocon. It's not in the series anymore.
Jacques Lafitte.
He's going to go for Olivier Panis.
Olivier. Oui.
Okay. Sacre bleu. 3, 2, 1. I've gone Lando Norris.
I've gone Max.
No.
We're both wrong again. We stink.
This was Lance Stroll.
Was it before he crashed at Sochi that time? Do you remember when he was like, just let me drive the car? Obviously not an accent, whatever, but he immediately just went off into
what
the
was
barrier.
It like they were like, oh, do you want a new set of tires? And he was like, no, as he was spinning.
As he was spinning off. I was like, bro.
That was from the Bahrain Grand Prix.
Okay.
So it had that Max energy. Yeah,
Lance
GP.
Lance cooked at Bahrain with his dodgy wrist, actually, didn't he?
Yeah, no, he did.
Yeah, right, okay. So none out of three.
Nice.
One out of
You've
three.
You've got one, yeah.
Okay, I'm holding on.
Holding it down.
For dear life, right.
We're not showing great wheel knowledge right now.
Obviously, the accent will be different, but I'm going to try and match the energy of the driver.
Okay. Excellent.
All right,
okay,
here
excellent.
We go.
Okay.
Are you trying to crash me or what?
Ooh.
Trying to crash me.
Are you trying to crash me or what? See those two cars? Mine's the one in the middle.
What accent is that meant to be?
Whose court is this jacket?
Is that someone from like an Indiana Jones movie?
Yeah. I only knew it was Welsh because he said beforehand he was going to do Welsh.
Yeah. The second sentence was kind of Welsh.
Not so much Tom Jones, more like Tim James or something.
I gave it my best.
Welsh is difficult. That's best. A tough accent to be fair to do. All right, I've got a name.
Fence, I don't know at this point. Honestly.
Are you trying to crash me or what?
It feels like it's so late.
I'm feeling great because this room's so dark as well. It's just like actually bright outside now. It's say almost 9 a.m. Right,
do you remember the outside in the long ago.
Yeah, I don't remember what it
before this
like.
Game started.
Right, 3, 2, 1. I've gone Yuki Tsunoda.
Yeah. You caught it. You caught the energy. It
Yeah. Did you say, Niro?
K-Mag. I put K-Mag.
K-Mag. Oh.
That was true, Yuki.
Yeah, we'll do the last one.
Fuck it. We'll do it.
Victory.
Double or nothing. Double or nothing.
No. Absolutely not. No. No, I've took part in the yells.
Winner takes all.
Earlier this year in this quiz, right?
What other accents I vaguely do? Okay, you ready?
Why don't you go for like...
Advertiser friendly.
Why don't you go for like South American or an African?
No.
No.
Okay, here we go.
Always a safe bet.
Quote number 5. I push like an animal, mate.
Ooh.
Which was my attempt at Spanish.
I push like an animal.
Difficult. It wasn't enough sentence to do a proper
Spanish. Someone that would be Spanish.
Yeah, that sounds like a... But obviously not. Maybe that's a reverse strategy. Maybe it was.
Maybe he's gone... Maybe because they've been doing different accents, they've actually decided this time, you know what,
for a TV pilot, I think this is going well.
Very well. I push like an animal, mate.
I have like 3 people that this could realistically be.
Fuck. Okay.
Fuck the feds. I'm going to do the obvious one.
Who could that be, man? There's a few different
animal mates.
Okay. I've got someone.
I swear to God, if it's like Esteban Ocon after all, it's gonna be funny.
It's funny because that's what I've just written.
Is it?
He got it. He did it. He got you with a double bluff.
Fernando Alonso
at the Monaco Grand Prix.
As soon as I heard animal, I was like,
he's
the only person that's saying that, really.
You know what? You can have
he
that
does
one.
Does animal ones a lot, doesn't he?
He does.
The Japanese Grand Prix.
I need him to defend like a lion.
Niren won the battle, but I won the war.
Yeah, no, facts.
He's very into his quotes.
I thought we agreed on winner takes all before that.
There's literally... There's 5 cameras.
No,
next I don't know what you're talking
it's
about.
It's not Abu Dhabi 21. I can't just make stuff up.
Michael Massey down the line. Like, yeah, Niren's won it, mate.
Yeah, Michael's lead producer, actually. That's his job now.
Yeah, exactly. Mad thing. There we go. Finally got him a job.
So that's it. I was the winner. Thank you again to Santander and Lap0 for supporting. You can get involved as well. Links are down in the description down below. You've got a chance to win a little meetup with me and Niren in Maranello in December next month. Very excited for that one, mate.
Sensational stuff.
Sensational
indeed.
Stuff. Check it out. One thing I did want to also touch on before we get to the end of the Charles Leclerc talk, by the way, is that little scrap with Checo on the final lap, though.
Oh,
what a move to take P2. What did we make? Could Checo have done more? I think maybe.
He could have tried harder as a go-kart driver to perfect his craft and carry with him through his career slightly higher, just a slightly higher skill level, and then he would have been in a better position to fend off that move. So Checo was in
an
objectively
answer.
Faster car than Leclerc and had 5-lap newer tyres. So
he did.
I think we've already given him, and he obviously had lots of benefit through safety cars and stuff to get into that position.
And Max was giving him a bit of slippity stream as well.
And Max was giving him a bit of a slipstream. So I think we've probably given Checo enough advantages to give him a good shout at maintaining that position, and he still couldn't. So I'm going to say Leclerc did a mega
job. Don't know why he just didn't even slightly cover it off. Like, it's the last lap. He's obviously going to try something.
If he'd have covered it off, we might have accused him of defending thin air.
Yeah.
And then if he lost out on the cutback, we'd probably be yelling at him for being overcautious, I guess, would be the argument.
But he would have been fine there. But that specific turn, though, I think we said it in the show, it's not the same as like the Senna S's in Brazil, where if you defend thin air, you are in the bin for the next straight.
Of course.
That is just the way that track is at Interlagos. It's not the case here.
And this is the last lap.
And it's the last lap. Like, if you defend there, coming out, it's a slow enough corner where the person behind just has to wait for you to put the gas on. And then it's a slipstream race to the line. Fares, you might lose that, whatever. But like, genuinely speaking, I think he would have been fine.
I agree.
It's a learning experience. First time we've been here, but
to give you the opportunity to lay that wheel knowledge down.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate any opportunity.
Red carpet.
Any opportunity I get to lay down my limited wheel knowledge is appreciated.
I liked it. It was good. I did like it.
In Perez's defense, Leclerc came from a long way back, and when you watch the onboard,
it
doesn't look like there's a move about to happen. Until suddenly Leclerc goes for it. Mm. So I don't think it was a completely stupid lack of defense from Perez. I just think maybe he could have hovered somewhere in the middle rather than being fully leaving a door open. On the
And again, when Leclerc made that mistake slightly earlier on, which let Perez pass as well, I think that just demonstrated he was qualifying laps at the end to try and keep Checo behind,
yeah,
and did a fantastic job. Actually, we haven't. This is another race closer to the end of the year, another race closer to learning what will be Red Bull's driver lineup in 2024. Wasn't much of a race from Ricciardo, but obviously having you two boys on, and I know you've got a place in your heart for Checo, Spanners. How do you think that's going to play out next year?
I think
year?
It's fine. I think he's all right. It would be a real like surprise moment, wouldn't it, if at this point they now pulled the trigger. All the noises they're making have been positive, and I think they gave him a bit of a hurry up, and he's probably done, you know, just enough. He's one of these drivers under threat, perhaps during the season, especially from a reputation point of view. And there's probably a few drivers you could list. Reputations have taken a bit of a battering. So Perez, maybe Russell a little bit this season, Sargent, Stroll. And they have, to a certain extent, you know, had the word in the ear. You know, Sargent, stop crashing the car every single race. Like, just take the odd race off crashing and maybe you can have a new contract. I think Perez just got that hurry up of like, you. And I think Horner said, you've got to stop thinking about beating Verstappen and just start thinking about your own race. And we certainly got, we had chats with people who had heard from the shop floor that Perez had insisted on copying Verstappen's setups verbatim and was still looking at, no, I can beat him in equal machinery, equal setup and go for it. Whereas the team, I think they might have just said to him, just settle for driving the best race you can in this.
Yeah.
So my point of view is, I think Perez is safe. I haven't really heard any noises that we were a month or so ago where it was looking really shaky. And another performance here where he cemented his second place in the championship. Has he definitely got it now? Is that the... He had to outscore Hamilton by 6 points.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's done.
I think that he's done the thing that they said he needed to do to secure his place.
The biggest crime in Formula One history has been avoided. That's good.
But I also think that it might not be a good thing for him if the other teams are closer next year, because there's no reason to think that he's going to suddenly be closer throughout the season to Verstappen next year. Hmm. And if all the other teams are much closer, then there are going to be cars in between Verstappen and Perez.
And not every race is a street circuit with traction zones, slow speed corners, long straights, which does play to his strengths.
Yeah. Nothing to suggest they'll be closer. What about blind hope?
I'll give you that.
You didn't consider that. Brad, you didn't consider that.
Biggest crime in history if he'd not finished second. Mark Webber not finishing second in 2013.
That is up there, to be fair.
Yeah, nah, but Fernando was consistently
up there.
But you
can say Mark Webber.
There's not been a consistent second quickest, even team. Mercedes have been consistently like third quickest. Like, they've not often been second quickest Mercedes, even though they're going to probably finish second in the
team. Yeah, at least
well, Ferrari. I don't know, Ferrari had a good day.
This should have been a season where second place in the championship was absolutely out of the question for anyone other than one of the Red Bull drivers, with a car that's won almost every single race.
Yeah, bar one.
And, you know, normally pretty comfortably. And like you say, an inconsistent, challenging team. Perez should have absolutely walked to a strong second place. So.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that I'm still not convinced. I still think that I think this was a good race for Checo, but I'm still concerned for him. I do think it's the sponsorship that gets him over the line to secure that seat. If he wasn't bringing all of that, you know, those big sponsors to Red Bull Racing, I think he would be really, like, Ricciardo would be all over that seat.
I think it's a combination of that. Plus, they don't really need, you know, Red Bull function well with a clear number one. Max is going to do the job.
And there's no guarantee that Ricciardo won't just be a like-for-like swap either. There's no guarantee he'll be the same Ricciardo that they got in 2018. And arguably, that's actually a problematic Ricciardo because he would be too close to Max. I don't think he would be. I think he would actually be...
Same.
I think he'd be a better number two, personally. But
he'd be in more danger, Perez, if Tsunoda had just kicked Lawson's ass. He'd be in more danger. Had Lawson had more time to show what he could do, had Ricciardo not broken his hand, but even Ricciardo's race pace when he's been up against Tsunoda, when you look lap by lap during the race, you look at that and you go, he's not really faster than Tsunoda. And I think reputation wise, you have to come in and look a lot faster than Tsunoda. That's, you know,
that's fair.
In the
you've got to pepper him.
Because I think Tsunoda's ultimate pace is underrated, but because he has a big mistake in him. For sure. I think that doesn't help Yuki's case because he's not getting anywhere near that Red Bull seat. And one driver I did want to talk about as well, we briefly mentioned them earlier, George Russell. We say his reputation has taken a bit of a hit this year. I just wanted to talk more generally about George because this was another, well, you mentioned it earlier, Brad, he did just drive into the side of Max Verstappen. on what was a pretty good weekend up until that point.
Yeah, that was a bit unnecessary. That he kind of ruined his entire day
yeah.
through that. And ultimately has finished behind his teammate because of the penalty he's got. So, yeah, and I don't think Russell's pace throughout the race was particularly strong compared to Hamilton's. I know they were on very, very different programs through the race. But anyway, yeah, this season in general, Russell has, he's shown that he's maybe lacking in one particular area slightly, which is having the best possible race pace deep into a stint when you compare him to Hamilton. Yeah, exactly. And still really, really good in qualifying in general. But today's mistake was weird. I don't expect that. Mm-hmm. When we saw the contact from outside and from the angle we saw, and we saw the pieces of car flying, I was pretty sure that that was Verstappen running him a bit wide and Russell trying to hang on, ultimately to a move that was probably done, but it would have been a kind of 50-50 fault, blame apportioning. But watching Verstappen's on board, it looked pretty clear like George just really screwed up. He just tried to turn into a piece of track that had a car on it and ended up bouncing off the side and wrecking his race. So unnecessary, maybe a bit desperate, and it didn't seem like a race where he needed to be desperate.
So Norris on the team radio, his engineer said to him, in Brazil, they said, it's Russell next. You know what he's like. He's all or nothing. And so you go, oh, wow, he's really got this reputation of all or nothing. And it's the risk reward. So today, was it really worth, did he really think, I'm in a fight with Max Verstappen for the win, I guess? That's a miscalculation. And in Brazil, he thought he was battling Lewis Hamilton, where he didn't have the pace at all to battle Lewis Hamilton. So he seems to be misjudging where he is.
Well, Singapore hits the wall in the final lap. Like,
such a weird season.
This is what I mean. Like, because him and Lewis have gone, like, they're the closest head-to-head in terms of qualifying delta. I think his one lap pace, I think, you know, Lewis is an exceptional qualifier. I think you can't doubt that. You can't doubt his ultimate pace.
Yeah.
But he's not the finished product. But I think we're really seeing that this year.
Yeah, one lap ultimate pace isn't what modern Formula One hinges on, especially when the cars can overtake.
It's never been less important in my time watching F1, which is like a year. No, it's like 30,
or two, maybe. Yeah, no, I just think that, like, where do Mercedes, because you've got a driver in George who can qualify, put it there close to Lewis. And if Mercedes can turn a corner with this car and be further up next year, it doesn't seem that they can rely on George, unfortunately, in the same way that, I mean, I guess this weekend's not a great example because Lando did just shunt on his own. But it feels like McLaren can maybe rely, because Lando doesn't make too many of those kind of mistakes.
That was,
Whereas that was very in character.
I remember the last time I saw that.
Of Russell. This is the thing, right? So, whereas Lewis has demonstrated a lot of class this year.
Especially in the second half of the season, man. It's just,
like, on the tyres, managing his way through.
It does actually kind of feel like desperation sometimes from George.
Hamilton retires, surprise retirement tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
And Albon gets his seat, say. What does that Mercedes look like this year? It doesn't look like it's fighting for P2 at all. It looks like it's struggling to stay in the midfield.
That's a good point.
So I think with the current balance of the Mercedes drivers, if they say they ended up with the best car next year, a tenth ahead of a Red Bull, they're going to be in a real tricky position, because you're going to 50% of the time have Russell out qualifying Hamilton and then being in the way, as he has been when he's out qualified him.
He's
this
fast
season.
Enough to be in the way.
Fast enough to cause a problem.
Yeah,
and not
in that conversation.
And definitely not the kind of driver who's happy to accept a number two role. So he's not going to replay that game as much as he will claim that on the radio occasionally. So, you know, claim that he's happy to help or we should be working as a team. So I think in that situation, a Red Bull that's a tenth of a second or two tenths slower than a Mercedes will still win the championship against them with the current dynamic.
Yeah.
Because Max will always be the one winning in that team. And it'll be a share of the wins or some silly, uncomfortable races with drivers getting in each other's way with Mercedes.
What I will say with George is, yes, he's got, you know, this will be his fifth year in Formula One, the end of his fifth year, because he had three at Williams and this is the second. And obviously when he was in the Williams, he's right at the back because that car was absolute trash. And like, he's still got room to develop. I mean, Crash Stappen used to be a thing. You know, Leclerc's got a stinker in him as well. I think it's a lot, like, the standard that certain drivers set. I mean, you know, I'm not being funny. We've seen Lewis making mistakes this year. We've seen Fernando making some, he made a big mistake this weekend into turn one. He's made a couple this year as well. Like, I think when it's relative to your teammate, I think the amount of scraps he's had with Lewis has been concerning for sure.
Almost you can tell that his number one concern in life is to beat Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
That's the thing he cares
about. Yeah, not even just in Formula One, just like overall, like all life.
Down the catwalk in the fashion show.
Yeah.
And Lewis, George can't bring the drip like Lewis can though.
No, he's got that. He's got like...
You know what that means as well?
Yeah, he's got like the tweed drip. You know, like wearing like fucking brown clothes, like fox hunting,
barber deal,
well dressed.
Well, look, quick one, boys, to wrap up. Obviously, looking ahead to next season, who do you think is going to be there? From what you've seen in 21 races this year, who's going to be the team to take it to Red Bull first and foremost next season?
I don't think you can tell. Everyone's at such different phases of development.
God, give me really a team, Spanners.
Mercedes.
Alpine.
Alpine.
No.
Because they've
who you least expect.
You just said you can't say no to anyone.
You didn't expect Aston Martin at the start of the year. It just came. Just 17 upgrades in the car.
Renault have been promising the last 8 years. It's always a year away, isn't it? It's always next couple of years. We've got a plan. We've got a 3-year plan. I think Renault will... If they're going to make a step, it will be the step to the top of the midfield. So they're, in reality, fourth would be a success for Alpine next season. For McLaren, genuinely breaking into the top three or making it a top four, that would be realistic. But if you look at the progression of teams in the last 12, 15 years, you rarely ever get a massive, massive leap up the grid. So let's go all the way to 2010, give ourselves 13 years. The biggest movement of championship positions has been McLaren. And that has been largely due to them dropping like a stone with Honda and then recovering. Broadly speaking, the cars stay more or less where they are in the championship. That's why when Aston Martin looked like the second best car, I was saying to everyone, pump the brakes. There's no way they went from the seventh best car to the second best car, because it just doesn't happen. And if it did, it would be a miracle. So for people who are expecting McLaren, for example, to challenge Red Bull, I would just say, just bear in mind, okay, it might happen. It would be extraordinary. And in fact, it would probably be the biggest ever, or this century's biggest leap, you know, from of performance between season mid-regulation, if you want to put it that way. So I hate to be boring, but it's probably going to be much the same.
I'm still saying McLaren, but just purely, I do hear what you're saying, because if you take it from the start of this season into next season, makes absolutely no sense, because you don't get those jumps. We've got Aston Martin and they just filtered back through because they did all of their development at the start of the season and then plateaued as it went along. But I think genuinely, just because we've had enough time where McLaren have genuinely been second or third in the second half of this season, the actual trajectory is to stay there if going into next season, if that makes
mini
sense.
Mini counter is that they realized very early that they had nothing to fight for this season. So they went with their new concept early. Mm-hmm. And what you're seeing is them having kind of rolled that dice early on. A lot of the other teams, say like Mercedes, will be looking at, you know, okay, we're saving that up for next season.
Yeah.
And they were already fighting for this season. So you'll get a bit of a reset in that regard.
Yeah. They will shift potentially a little bit backwards. Obviously, Andrea Stella was saying that we've got loads of things that we didn't put on the car this year that we can only put on the car next year.
Well, there's going to be new chassis tubs for everyone that no one can really afford to change within the cost cap of a single season. That's what Toto was saying.
Yeah.
And that's what Stella's said as well. They both made similar noises about that.
You never know.
I do get the feeling McLaren are quite out of phase with some of the other front, more towards the front running teams with the developments, like you say. So I'd be surprised if they are any nearer to Red Bull than they are right now, because Red Bull are going to make their big step over the winter. Out of all the front running teams, the one that's going to change the most, I think, is Mercedes. So I know it's the easy answer to just say Mercedes will be the closest team or the challenger, but they are the team we know for a fact their entire concept will be different, and they have some fundamental limitations on what they've been able to do to this year's car, to this chassis. So I feel like they've got the biggest potential to move forward. And I think they've probably got, on balance, the strongest driver lineup, or very, very close to the average strongest driver lineup. I think they've got the most potential that is waiting to be unleashed with a fresh car.
That's what worries me. Partly about with Mercedes, it's like the quality of their driver lineup, has that also masked a lot of the potential like this car with two different drivers who aren't at the level of Lewis and George.
They'd have sacked more people.
Yeah. I mean, I think they wouldn't have stuck with the zero pod for as long as they have almost. They were suffering from somewhat success with the zero pod. But there you go. Boys, it was an absolute pleasure to talk all about the Vegas Grand Prix. Spanners, where can the people find you?
You can find me at MissedApexPodcast.com, where we do a podcast. But it's, I would say, grumpier. It's more of a cardigan.
Nice, yeah. Yeah.
We do
it cozy.
We do it late at night.
Nothing wrong with a good cardigan.
There's some slurring, but if it's your niche, it's your niche.
Mm-hmm. Tipple's going. Brad?
You can find me at my YouTube channel. Just search for Brad Philpott Motorsport or just Brad Philpott on YouTube or on Twitter at Bradley Philpott.
And sometimes on Mixtape.
And I'm a driver expert on Mixtape podcast. Nice. When Spanners will
He's actually being modest because not only are you a fantastic championship series winning driver, but you're also a tyre professional. You're a tyre expert. You give us that great insight. So yeah, follow Brad, I guess, but really follow me at Spanners Ready. At Spanners Ready. Like that, it's better slightly. I want to win. He's beating me right now.
Yeah, Brad did beat Sebastian Vettel in the Race of Champions, but...
And all the other F1 drivers.
He doesn't like to mention that. And everyone else, of course, at the same time. Niren, pleasure as always.
Pleasure indeed.
Wrap it up, fella.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you enjoyed, if you're watching on YouTube, of course, feel free to like and subscribe. We'll have plenty of clips going out over on TikTok as well from the podcast. And if you want to tune into the live show, of course, we'll be here for Abu Dhabi.
Season finale.
Next weekend.
Pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see you next week. Abu Dhabi, post-race and the live stream.
Indeed. Peace and love.
At midday as well. So it's not getting up in the middle of the night anymore.
Have you not got like a tagline? Unless have you not got like "Stay sexy, guys"? No.
I mean, they can do that.
That could be it.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah. Cool. Let's run that. Let's run that.
That was it.
No. It's you. Oh, you
have no, you've done it. You've done it.
It's come back.
We'll just recycle that little clip.
Yeah.
Of,
we'll just put it there.
Boys, pleasure as always. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time.